Delta CEO wants to use tech to make airports a happier place. Now that is a long-haul journey. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, demystifying the digital economy. I'm Molly Wood. This year at CES, the big electronics and tech show in Las Vegas held every January, the kickoff keynote presentation was, for the first time, by an airline CEO, Delta's Ed Bastian. He talked about how tech should help take the stress out of flying and, of course, make you want to pay more to fly Delta. The airline announced a few new features like updates to its app to include other parts of the trip, such as rideshare or hotel. Also, artificial intelligence to improve scheduling and investment in updating airports, including something called parallel reality, high-tech displays in airports that show personalized flight information to lots of different people all at the same time. Here's Ed Bastian from Las Vegas describing it to me.
You'd walk up to your gate and you'd see or you're boarding, try to figure out which gate you're going to and what time is it. And it seems like mumbo jumbo, particularly if you don't speak the language, if you're coming from another country. And it will have your welcome sign that just you personally will see. Welcome, Molly. Your gate is 826 and it's departing in 48 minutes. And there's a Starbucks, you know, halfway down there if you wanted to stop and get a coffee on the way down. Just think how welcoming that is. How personalized. How do you personalize the experience and have people have that connection to the brand and that emotional experience that we talk about at Delta?
What are the parts that you can't control? I mean, there are a lot of stakeholders, a lot of touch points in an airport. Yeah. You know, you can't really... I wish you could make TSA easier for people, yeah. But what yeah. are the parts that you won't be able to make easier?
I would tell you one of the things that's been unique to our turnaround is we stop thinking about the things that we can't control and start focusing on the things we can control. And there's many more things within our control than are not. Is they have TSA and the security queue. You know, we are not responsible for it, but we think like we're responsible for it because we're responsible for our customers and doing more and more of that and working more with biometrics to kind of facilitate that facial recognition while it certainly has privacy. You know, questions that people sometimes don't want to, which is fine. They don't have to opt for it if they don't want to. You know, facial recognition is a more efficient way to get people through a boarding and through the entire airport experience without them having to fumble for their passport or their boarding pass or kind of trying to find their papers.
Who are you? I mean, this is a bit of a departure, no pun intended, but who are you hiring? I would imagine a generation of data scientists and coders not necessarily thinking that Delta is the place I'm going to land.
Oh, we got a lot of data scientists because they like the challenge. This is big league stuff. This is actually solving dynamic issues that are happening real time, 24 hours a day. In fact, not only 24 hours, we call our business 46 hours in a day when you think about the full length around the world that we're flying. It's high class stuff. You know, we also, you know, people love to travel. And so that's one of the perks. It's like, you know, while we're competing with, you know, the Amazons and the other for talent, we're actually winning a lot of people coming, you know, from high tech organizations because they like the work, they like the challenge of the work, and they like the product.
I have to be honest, coming into this CES, I thought you were going to announce facial recognition in like every airport and every Delta boarding because I know that's something that you have talked about and experimented with as an airline. Where is that?
Well, it's coming, right? It's there in most of our international markets now. You know, I think people are still trying to figure out what's their point of view on facial, and communities are trying to figure that, and you know, and some governments are as well. For us at Delta, it's important. It's an opt-in system. We're not forcing people to go through facial recognition. We think it's a great technology to help facilitate, you know, the flow through an airport as well as the effectiveness of the security trying to figure weed out the bad guys. But the reality is that I think people are still getting used to the concept. So no, we weren't planning. What we wanted to do was announce things that are coming over the next 5 years as compared to things that we're already doing.
Okay. Is it a little trickier than we all thought it was going to be? Facial recognition?
Well, facial recognition, no, I wouldn't say that. Facial recognition on the international side is largely in place. We still have some more airports to finish rolling out. On the TSA, on the domestic side, yes, that's probably more challenging because higher number of volume of passengers domestically and then internationally that travel. Secondly, you don't have the infrastructure really in place through TSA to accommodate. Yet again, you think about those clogged hallway sometimes through which TSA operates, adding another form of access through there with facial, it's just that much more challenging.
Right.
But as we're building the infrastructure in the airports, that's where we're leaning towards.
I want to ask you about climate change.
Yeah.
Because when people fly a lot, it's good for your business.
Yeah.
But there is this realization,
yep,
I think increasingly, that it's bad for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take climate into account, and how might some of this investment in technology,
yeah,
maybe mitigate some, yeah, of that in the future?
Well, those are, I think that is the existential question for us for our future in terms of our ability to grow. Is that if we can't grow sustainably, our industry is not going to be given the right to grow. I think it's that serious. And we are doing a lot in that regard. And I'm pretty self-critical of Delta as well as the industry in this respect. I think we've kind of been defensive about it. I think we've talked in a passive voice. We've talked about things that we're doing less of as compared to what we're doing to actually make the planet better. We're just doing less bad as compared to doing more good. And you got to do both. And you got to, by the way, also engage your customers in that journey. This is not something the airlines by themselves can fix. This is something that the customers and the airlines and the entire ecosystem has to work out a solution. At Delta, we've made good progress, largely through new engine technology. Every new plane that we bring into Delta is 25% more fuel efficient than the plane that's departing. This year alone, we'll have 80 new airplanes. We've replaced one third of our fleet within the last 5 years. So we're doing a lot of work in that regard. Our emission levels are down 11% since 2005. And in 2012, we voluntarily capped our emission levels. So any growth above 2012 levels in emissions has all come carbon neutral. And we've grown 25% since 2012. So we're doing things that, candidly, I think are probably not the best, but I think there's a number of industries that can't match, some of the stats that we're already starting to derive. But our main culprit is jet fuel, clearly. It's about 2.5% of the CO2 emissions, in our world are due to jet fuel. And so what we've set as a goal is to reduce our jet fuel emissions, our footprint, by 50% by the year 2050.
So then how do you see tech changing the way we fly and fly more sustainably in the next 10 years? Like, are you investing in electric planes?
No, I don't think the technology is going to be there for a while. We're certainly investing in understanding, what the technologies are capable of, and working with the engine makers and understanding. But no, there's no substitute for a jet engine today on an aircraft. So what we have to do is we have to invest in lighter weight planes. We have to invest in higher performing engines. A 25% reduction in fuel efficiency per plane is a significant amount. We're using it to where we can't offset completely the growth of fuel. We're having to invest in programs and resources through offsets and other means to make sure we're replenishing the resources of the planet real time that we're using. So it's not kind of a one answer. There's a lot of things that come into play here.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask why there are so many boarding categories. Do there need to be that many? Like, we're sliced. Sometimes there's only 8 people in the category. And then I feel like I thought I upgraded, but I'm still 9 groups away.
Yeah.
Help. Can we just make that simpler?
Yes, we can. And I said that this morning. I said that, the boarding process is very complicated. It's confusing. It's unnecessary in terms of some of the complexity. We're working on ways to do that. I mean, it's segmenting customers to probably a degree that we don't need to go down. We're going to be introducing, and we announced today, something for the app called virtual queuing, so that you will get a push notification when you are ready to board, not when your plane is boarding, but when Molly is ready to board, and then you'll get that notification. That'll be your queue. Hopefully, it cuts down on some of the cluster around the gates. But we're working on that. We're very committed to that. One of the other things about the infrastructure build in the airports is that the real estate that needs to be by the gate historically was built for a pre-9/11 security queue, where people didn't spend time gathering around the gate. They just kind of waited in the head house in the lobby area of an airport. It only took them 5 minutes to get over to the gate. And so they would be in the restaurant, they'd be other places, and getting on the planes where it was not a big deal. And also the loads. The load factors on the planes were a lot less, years ago when those planes airports were designed, than they are today. So as we're building the new airports, we're flipping the real estate around. We're putting a lot more space at the gate because nobody spends any time in the lobby of an airport. You know, why would you spend time there? There's nothing to do. You want to get to the gate. That's where we want you to have your amenities. The first you know, point of contact really should be the security queue, getting through security, you know, into the airport, and then you're turning that entire real estate that can be used by people that have an opportunity to get into a more comfortable setting.
All right. Well, I'm glad it's on the list.
It's on the list.
That's Delta CEO Ed Bastian. We talked last week at CES in Las Vegas. In the Marketplace Tech podcast, you'll hear more tech details about those parallel reality displays and how Bastian says the company is tackling climate change and emissions from its planes. And now for some related links. During our interview, I actually suggested that the biggest competition to airlines might be rage, to Bastian's point about the stress and frustration of travel. But it turns out that a new disruption has emerged, flight shaming. The BBC reported last week that Sweden, home of teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg, has seen a 4% drop in airline travel. And one of the reasons that the country's airport operators gave was climate change, specifically increased awareness of the emissions caused by flying and public shaming about flying too much. So now let's do some related audio. You heard Bastian and I talk about this parallel reality thing they're launching in the Detroit airport. I tried it out at CES, and it really is impressive. Like, I can be standing right next to someone, and I'll see my flight information. I asked for it to be in French just to try out the language stuff. And then the person standing right next to me saw completely different information in a different language. It is cool. The display was actually developed by a company called Misapplied Sciences. It's a startup that was funded by Delta. I asked its CEO, Albert Ng, how it all works.
If you have a display, a normal display, displays are made of pixels to create an image. The pixels of a normal display emits the same colored light in all directions at any time. So if you have red pixel, it emits red light everywhere. Our pixels can control the color of light that it sends in different directions. So at one time, a single pixel can emit red light towards you, so that you looking at it, you see red, and simultaneously emit green light towards the person standing right next to you. So the person standing right next to you would perceive green while you're seeing red. So we're doing that on a pixel-by-pixel basis, controlling the color of light that we're sending to each person standing in the environment.
Math-wise, if each pixel can emit, what, Roy G. Biv?
Yes.
And you've got, like, a 4K display?
The data bandwidth is orders of magnitude higher for our display than a normal display. That's why we had to develop our own custom processor, built it into our displays to do all the rendering and calculations to make it a feasible system. So the experience that you're getting here in terms of seeing your own content, having a seamless customer journey, the goal of the technology is to make your experience as simple and easy as possible. But the underlying technology is very complex.
How many people can experience parallel reality at a time?
With the displays that we're showing here at CES and in Detroit, we can do about 100 people simultaneously. We have other display technologies that can do in upwards of thousands.
Now, Albert Ng wouldn't tell me how much these screens cost, but he said the goal is to eventually make them about the same cost as those big LED walls you see everywhere currently. But if I had to guess, I'd say that right now, it's probably a lot more expensive than that. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.